since my voice broke, I've been destined to say something as creepy as that, I think.
If there was anything more embarrassing than going to a Coldplay concert.
Apparently they're really good live. It's great to see where everybody's authoritarian issue is. Like, you will be like, oh, you know, all cops are bastards, defund the police. Except for this one issue.
Hello everybody and welcome to A Few Scoops. My name is Aoife Murr. I am a journalist and author, and my co-host, the Grand Marshal of Cork, Colm O'Regan.
Yes, I'm Colm O'Regan and I am hurting this week because of what happened in Cork on Sunday. It's tough for Cork people right now. This is the sound of me wishing Tipperary all the best through gritted teeth. But in fairness, you bait us well. What can you do? Life goes on. And we're here on A Few Scoops to take you through some of the news, the good and the bad.
The news with less existential dread. We have the ongoing conflict in Israel and Gaza. The two worst people on earth are suing each other. A man can no longer enjoy a Coldplay concert with his mistress. Ireland's favourite businessman is now charging people for overweight hand luggage. And Steven Seagal's Cork visit that never was. Let's get into it. Trump is back in the news. But yet, it gets worse. Three of the worst people on earth are all involved, some way, in a court case. So American President Donald Trump is suing his former friend, Rupert Murdoch, head of News Corp, for $10 billion after a letter allegedly written by Donald Trump to the paedophile, now deceased paedophile, Jeffrey Epstein, in 2003, was revealed by the Wall Street Journal. So the Wall Street Journal, very respected paper in the US, owned by Australian media mogul Rupert Murdoch. They posted a birthday card slash letter. It's hard to know what it actually was. We haven't seen a picture of it, but a birthday message to Jeffrey Epstein in 2003, allegedly written by Donald Trump, in which the outline was, this is an audio format, but I'm doing it with my hand, the outline of a naked lady, and in the lady's pubic region there was a scribble of a name.
Amazing charades there, Aoife. I don't want to give you notes on that.
And then there was a screed of text from allegedly Donald Trump to Jeffrey Epstein. So I'm going to get you to read out the message that Donald Trump wrote to Jeffrey Epstein on his 50th birthday in 2003. Take it away, Colm, in your sexiest voice.
So just imagine that this is a fictitious dialogue between Donald Trump and Jeffrey Epstein. I'll just read Donald's lines.
Just read Donald's lines, yeah.
The voiceover starts off, just to give you context. There must be more to life than having everything, voiceover. Donald, yes, there is, but I won't tell you what it is. We have certain things in common, Jeffrey. Enigmas never age. Have you noticed that? A pal is a wonderful thing. Happy birthday, and may every day be another wonderful secret.
I mean, Jesus Christ.
Ever since my voice broke, I've been destined to say something as creepy that, I think. Actually, when my voice first broke, my party trick was the snapper was out at the time.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So for some reason, my voice had the correct level of creepiness to say, are you all right, Sharon? And I've never achieved that level of creepiness since.
Yeah.
It's that's 30 years ago. Yeah. And 30, no, more than 30. My voice broke when I was 8, okay. But I've never achieved that level of creepiness since until I read those lines, given who's writing it and who it's written to.
Yeah. So Donald Trump obviously denies that he ever wrote this and said he will no longer tolerate the abusive wrongdoings of the fake news media. I hope Rupert and his friends are looking forward to the many hours of depositions and testimonies they will have to provide in this case. So Donald Trump has previous in suing large media corporations, which in any other presidency would be scandalous because there should be freedom of the press. And he is now suing not only Rupert Murdoch, but the company that he owns and the two named journalists on the stories for $10 billion. He said this is because of reputational damage to Donald Trump. Donald Trump now has tried to put some space between him and Jeffrey Epstein. However, there are multiple photographs and videos of the two together. There is video footage of him talking about his good friend Jeffrey Epstein and actually how interested Jeffrey Epstein was in young women. But the reason I think this has caused Donald Trump so much heartache is because Trump's own base really want him to release what's known as the Epstein files by the FBI. Donald Trump promised during the election he would release them. Then they were told that there was nothing there, that the Attorney General said they wouldn't be releasing them because there's nothing to release. Donald Trump at one point tried to blame Barack Obama, who wasn't even president.
Yeah.
And he has pissed off his own supporters. He has told them to move on. He's told them to get over it. He's told them that they're radical, that they're idiots, that there's more things to be concentrating on in the country. And it started an internal war within MAGA.
And this is almost the very definition of, well, if it isn't the consequences of my own actions, because he seeds this conspiracy theory, which I think, did it start in QAnon or is that in parallel?
I think it's in parallel. So there is this widespread belief among a small fraction of Americans. They believe that there is a satanic pedophile cabal run by
which
the elite.
The worst kind of cabal, just to let people know. Yeah.
Run by the elites that run a pedophile ring and human trafficking. And they have falsely accused a number of people. But Jeffrey Epstein was very much a pedophile and a human trafficker. And he took his own life in prison. A lot of people don't believe he took his own life. And the way, I don't know whether he did or not, but the way the American Justice Department has conducted themselves would lead conspiracy-minded people to believe he didn't take his own life. And the more you tell people who believe in a conspiracy that there's no there, the more they will continue. And Trump has driven a wedge with his own followers now. Kind of remains to be seen what will happen.
Yeah, but it's something we talked about before on the pod. The question is, when you're the leader of a cult, I'm not saying he's the leader of a cult, given how litigious he is. I'm just saying cult leaders in general, for the cult to end requires people to lose faith in the leader. But to lose faith in the leader means they admit that they were wrong and they fell for the leader. So the question really is, will MAGA, are they serious about this or will they eventually, he'll distract them? Most recent distraction would have been threatening the Washington Commanders, as they are now, a football team, with not allowing them to build a new stadium or something like that.
Because they changed their
Because they changed their name from the Washington Redskins. Again, just a distraction.
Just actually this morning, he announced that he was going to release the files on Martin Luther King's assassination.
Okay.
So all of this is distractions from the fact that he was friends with Jeffrey Epstein. He probably sent him that letter. Jeffrey Epstein may or may not have killed himself. But we're also talking about this against the backdrop of the fact that Elon Musk, not a man I would take to the grave anyway, but Elon Musk has already tweeted and said the reason that those files were not released was because Donald Trump was in them.
Okay.
And even if he's in them in a very passive way, even if he's just named as a friend or an acquaintance, you just do not want your name anywhere near Jeffrey Epstein.
Well, he probably could have had his name near him if he hadn't denied it for a couple of years. So what if MAGA was to feel hurt, it would be that they were lied to, even though surely in their heart of hearts, they must know they've been lied to on so many other things.
Mm.
I mean, you want everybody to somehow lose in this case.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that between Donald Trump, Rupert Murdoch and Jeffrey Epstein, three of potentially the worst people who have ever existed in terms of the consequences of their actions. Is there any way that both of them can lose? Because I don't want anyone to win here. But I also would say, and I'm no fan of Rupert Murdoch, but I also would say it is sets an incredibly terrifying precedent that the president of America can sue a newspaper for what they believe to be fair and accurate reporting.
And Rupert Murdoch, I mean, a couple of things he could do. He'd just throw the journalists under the bus and reach an old man agreement with Donald Trump. Is he looking, I wonder, at this and going, who should I hitch my wagon to here? Because I want a lot of the same things that Donald Trump wants. I want, you know, laws preventing climate change to be repealed. I want the gutting of civic society. I want people to buy my news and whatever stuff I'm feeding them. So I like what Donald Trump's doing, but I think he's potentially, this has wounded him. Maybe I change horses to maybe somebody like J.D. Vance, who's equally as awful but slightly more competent.
I think Rupert Murdoch is smart enough and plays the long game enough to know that if it is the case that Donald Trump, and it's more than likely that Donald Trump was very intertwined with Jeffrey Epstein, and more reports are coming out of it, Rupert Murdoch is no slouch. He is not going to be taken in by any cult of personality. I would say Rupert Murdoch will cut Trump off before the other way around, because at the end of the day, Rupert Murdoch also owns Fox News, and Trump needs Rupert Murdoch more than Rupert Murdoch needs Trump.
But how old is Rupert Murdoch? What do these people think about just taking it easy?
Hold on. He just got married there recently. Hold on. Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch. Oh my God! His birthday's the day after mine.
Well, we have a joint party.
Yeah. Rupert Murdoch is 94 years old.
So Rupert Murdoch still reckons he's got more left in the tank, as it were. So he's obviously, he cares about stuff, even though he's 94. I wonder, when you're 94, do you go, I've got another 10 years in me, I want to shape the world even more?
I think people like Rupert Murdoch do. Yeah. Rupert Murdoch and Donald Trump are cut from the same cloth. I said Rupert Murdoch has a bit of sense.
Yeah.
Whether it's used for good or evil is a different debate, but he does have a bit of sense.
He'll be delighted of all the accolades he's received, probably accolades that, you know, minions have given him, to be told that he has a bit of sense by top journalist Aoife Moore. Firebrand.
Former employee.
Aren't we all a former employee at some point?
Yes. Full disclosure, I did used to work for one of Rupert Murdoch's company, but most journalists at some point have done. So it's an incredibly GAA heavy couple of weeks. We had the All-Ireland hurling final on Sunday. We have Jimmy winning matches this Sunday with Donegal and Kerry in the football final. And for most people, even if you're not interested in the sport, I think it's been hard to miss the fact that GAA Palestine, a volunteer-led organisation in the West Bank, had organised for 46 Palestinians, including 33 children aged between 9 and 16, were due to travel to Ireland this week to play a number of hurling matches, to visit GAA monuments and take part in cultural exchange programmes with Irish children. These visas for the children were rejected by the Irish Immigration Service. This caused a huge amount of uproar, and the group said that they were profoundly disappointed. Now, they say that they were told by the Irish Embassy in Tel Aviv to book the flights without the approval. So they say they've lost 38,000 euros, and they are a volunteer and donation-led organisation, so it's a lot of money. They said that they had numerous appeals and attempts to engage, but the Department of Justice in Ireland dismissed their concerns, and the appeal process is so arduous that the trip will not go ahead. So these children who live in the West Bank under increased settler violence and every other human rights violation the Palestinians have to live under in the West Bank of Palestine now will not travel to Ireland because the Irish government immigration service said they didn't apply for visas properly. So this caused, you know, a lot of heartache for people, especially because the GAA used to be a banned organization. It was taken away from Irish people the way our culture was taken away from us, where our language was taken away from us, where our food was taken away from us. And that is why there is such a link between Ireland and Palestine, because we know what it's like to be colonized and have things taken away from us. And I think for all the issues within the GAA, and there are many, but for most people, the GAA is seen as the best of us. And the notion that we could bring 33 young people here who have suffered enormous trauma just by the very basis of their existence could come here and spend a summer with all our children their own age and play GAA is incredibly heartwarming and is the best of Ireland. The GAA is the best of us. It is run by volunteers. We do it for the love of it. Footballers who don't get paid. Transfers don't happen. It's seen as something that we do because we love it. And then for the Irish government to reject, not only reject these visas, but in the rejection of these visas, be incredibly condescending in the way they spoke to GAA Palestine. Micheál Martin was challenged on this in the Dáil. He said he was perplexed, was the right word, about the way they had applied for these visas. he said, you know, that they didn't appeal fast enough. There are ways and means of doing things. The Irish government can intervene with immigration when they want. Charlie Flanagan done it when he was the Justice Minister to ensure a young boy was not deported. And instead of noting the overwhelming support for Palestine in our society and the absolute overwhelming welcome that these children were guaranteed, Micheál Martin and took a real snotty attitude towards GAA Palestine. They've been offered no real option other than an appeal process that will basically guarantee that they won't be able to get here in time. I find it incredibly disappointing. Even if you look at it, right, from a non-humanity point of view, and you just look at it from like pure politics, this is such an easy one for the Irish government, and they still couldn't do it. They still couldn't be in lockstep with the public and say, yeah, they didn't do it right, but also this is a volunteer-run organisation in the West Bank of Palestine where settler violence and Israeli violence means that more than 900 people have died since October 7th. And they're getting on to them about the way they filled out farms. This has made me so angry and so disappointed. I very rarely feel like this government mirrors society. And I think this is one of the best examples of how little the Irish government knows about our people.
And what's going on? If it is such an easy political win, is it that they are sensitive to all the commentary about Ireland abroad in the context of the Occupied Territories Bill? Is this something that they're like, okay, let's just get this through and don't have any other things happening at the same time because it'll start to look like a pattern and I have to talk to my European colleagues in Brussels next week and this is just another thing that they're going to hit me with?
I personally think that's what it is. I think there has been so much about the Occupied Territories Bill. I think the Irish government are obsessed with what they look like in Europe. And I think all the hullabaloo about the Occupied Territories Bill, which still hasn't been passed, if they were seen to be approving visas for a cultural exchange program with children from the West Bank, it would give Israel another stick to beat them with in Europe. And I personally think that that's in the back of their minds and they can write it off and say, well, no, it was immigration and we can't bend the rules for anyone, when they have and they can. And I think that they are worried about what they look like on the European stage. And if that is the case, then I feel quite sorry for them. This could have been something really lovely and it was taken away. And we'll all get over it. Me and you will get over it. People will get over it. But these children have very little to look forward to. And, you know, the West Bank is different from Gaza. There is less violence, but there is violence and it is different. So settlers in the West Bank, Israeli settlers who are backed by the security forces.
And the settlements, and most of them are illegal or all of them are illegal?
I would argue all of them are illegal.
700,000 settlers and 3.5 million Palestinians.
And you can be evicted from your house at any time. Palestinians in the West Bank cannot vote. They need a permit to work. Where have we heard places like this before? I feel like in Ireland we've heard, you know, this pattern before. And they live a very jailed existence. Once you take away someone's civil rights and their ability to vote and ability to travel and ability to go wherever they want, it chips away at people's humanity, notwithstanding the amount of settler violence in which Israeli people will go into Palestinian people's homes and take them from them.
The whole settlement thing is the classic, we want to take over that area. The best way to do it is put our people there until the demographics
change.
It's been done in all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Tibet, Ulster.
So, yeah, the same thing I always tell people. If this is someone that moves you, you can write to your TD, you can speak to GAA Palestine and see how best to support them. But from what I can see, they're a really good-hearted organisation who just want to do right by these small children.
And in some ways, this is the kind of, it's not a small issue, but if you're struggling with the absolute hugeness of what's going on in the West Bank and, of course, Gaza, this is something where you actually have maybe a bit of leverage.
Yeah.
To affect the tiniest increment of change when you're feeling absolutely blown away by the size of the problem elsewhere.
Yeah, and just to add to this, in Gaza this week, so a number of European and other countries, 25 countries plus the European Union, released a joint statement which included Israeli allies like the UK, France, Australia and Canada, said in their joint statement that the war must end now. The suffering of civilians in Gaza has reached new depths. So this is the first time that these allies of Israel have spoken out. They condemned the drip feeding of aid and the inhumane killing of civilians, including children, seeking to meet their most basic needs of water and food. This week, the UN and the health ministry in Gaza recorded 875 people murdered in Gaza while they were trying to get food since late May, when Israel began easing a more than 2 month total blockade. So what's happening is that Israel is setting up these aid distribution points. They're corralling people into these points and then opening fire on them. This denial of essential humanitarian assistance to the civilian population is unacceptable, said the allies, and breaking international humanitarian law. I don't know what else to call corralling people into a pen and opening fire on them anything other than genocide. And I know, obviously, that we talked about this, how it feels too big that you don't even know where to start. But it'd be remiss of us not to talk about this today and talking about the ongoing starvation.
And the Pope condemned it.
Yeah, the new Pope, Pope Leo XIV, our new American Pope, has condemned the barbarity of the war in Gaza and Israel's indiscriminate use of force. So we know, obviously, that Pope Francis, the former Pope, often spoke out against the war in Gaza. And this is the first time now that Pope Leo has spoken out against it. Naturally, if you were thinking of people did claim to be Christian, what's happening in Gaza would be something they were completely revolted by, and it seems that Pope Leo is revolted by it as well.
And there's a new flotilla going as well too. It's called a Handala. So the last one was Madeleine. That was the one with Greta Thunberg on it. This one, Handala, which is named after a Palestinian cartoon character boy from the 60s. So they're headed off. I mean, they've already alleged that they've been sabotaged in port. One of the people on board is Jacob Berger. You might follow him on Instagram, Jewish American actor from Los Angeles. So they're on the way. That's just another flotilla to watch. And maybe the more people are watching, that's important too, even though it feels like nothing to have just eyeballs on social media on a flotilla. It doesn't seem like much, but the more people watch, maybe the safer they are.
Yeah. Callum, what's your favourite Coldplay song?
Anything gets me going, really. When I'm at the...
You're at the age for Coldplay, though, aren't you?
When I'm at a gig with my head of people... whichever gives me that unconscious coupling and conscious uncoupling feeling at the same time.
So two couples consciously uncoupled, we assume, this week when a US tech company confirmed that its chief executive has quit after he was apparently caught on a big screen at the Coldplay concert embracing a female co-worker in a clip that went viral. So everyone will have seen the video this week, but Andy Byron, the CEO of Astronomer, was caught on the Jumbotron at a Coldplay concert in which he was embracing a woman called Kristen Cabot, the firm's chief people officer. No irony detected. So for people who haven't seen it, at one part during the Coldplay concert, Chris Martin is like, the camera shines on different couples. You know, like they have the kiss cam at the NBA games and stuff. And Andy is there, much like Leo and Kate in Titanic. So she's in front of him and he's got his arms around her front. They, first of all, they look like brother and sister, was the first thing I thought. And as the Jumbotron zooms into them, the look of absolute fear and horror takes over their faces. They both spin around with their backs to the camera. And then Andy, as if he couldn't make it worse, then dives to the ground.
Yeah.
And it turns out that they were having an affair, that they are colleagues.
And of course, it's such a classic Streisand effect, because there are hundreds of Coldplay concerts. There's going to be a number of Jumbotron improvised lyric people in every concert. Had he just toughed it out?
Just wave.
Or, you know, pretend like the relationship's on its last legs.
Yeah.
In fact.
But if they had just waved at the camera like a normal couple, none of this wouldn't happen. Now, I know it's easy for us to say because you're not in the moment and they were clearly acting the maggot.
Yeah.
But it does start this whole new conversation about what is privacy. You know, can you be filmed in public? You know,
he must feel so annoyed about that, because surely it must be possible for a CEO to conduct an affair. Like, poor old Andy Byron, like, just one romantic clinch and appearing on a Jumbotron. His namesake, Lord Byron, could have ridden the entire stadium and members of Coldplay, and there'd be nothing more than a few salacious pamphlets about it. Bit of word of mouth. And then be celebrated for the rest of posterity as being handy enough at the old writing. So, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying I empathise with...
No, I do. I feel for them. I think whatever about obviously having affairs are incredibly detrimental to the people involved. But I think it's the last thing that anyone would expect of. But I really feel for Andy's wife, who, it has been reported, has been contacted multiple times, hundreds of times on social media. She knows her husband's doing the dog on her. You don't need a messenger on Facebook about it. And I feel, for me, it's not even the Jumbotron and the lack of privacy. It's the aftermath that worries me. It's the contact and the wife. It's the sending Andy messages. It's
the guy, the Dublin guy called Andy Byron, who woke up to thousands of messages on LinkedIn. I think he might technically be a CEO as well, because he runs a graphic design, a graphics company.
I haven't heard of it.
So he has, if you look Andy Byron up now.
No, don't.
No, but do, because it's good for business. His profile says not the Jumbotron guy. And he has a nice update on if you are looking for his services in the business that he's in, which I think is something to do with graphics.
Oh, that's good.
Then, you know, it's an ill wind, as they say. I mean, if nothing else, and you're right, this is terrible for the spouses involved, unless they are also at it. But it's terrible for them. It is yet another demonstration of the fact that affairs are an issue with logistics. Lies are such hard work.
Also, someone said to me once that the cost of living crisis really killed off the second family.
Okay.
You know, years ago, men would have a second family. Can't do that now.
Yeah. Just, you could have one like 20 miles away.
Yeah. It's too much.
No, it's public transport's too good.
But far be it from me, if there was anything more embarrassing than going to a Coldplay concert.
Apparently, they're really good live. Everybody will go now just to see who will be caught on the Jumbotron.
Do you think this actually could be detrimental to Coldplay, that people having affairs will now stop going to Coldplay concerts?
Well, I mean, it's something that would have been like an inside joke amongst people who go to Coldplay, like will appear in that. Now it's everybody's interested in it, and guarantee that everybody at the concert now will have their story straight.
Yes, of course. Where exactly
if they appear, they'll hold up signs saying, "She's my wife," etc., etc. I mean, in some ways, it's sort of a loss of innocence. Just like when Pete Hegseth texted Yemeni war plans to a journalist, it got everybody checking their WhatsApp groups.
It does.
Because you look through all your WhatsApp groups to see, you know, if you're in a big enough group, you won't know everybody's name, like the neighborhood WhatsApp group. And you're looking down through them and you're going, who are they? They don't have a name. And their profile photos, they're feckin' baby. I know I have to try and extrapolate the child's face to see whether that fits the adult, which neighbour
or
is that
dog.
Child, or a dog, or a fish.
Yeah, I once actually was texting a fella, and we had planned to go on a date, and his WhatsApp picture was his dog.
Okay.
And I found out that he was loving with his girlfriend.
Okay. So who turned up on the date? The dog?
No, I worked out he had a girlfriend met the dog, both literally and figuratively. Anyway, I feel for Andy. He's now resigned from his job. Listen, I don't really care if a CEO of a company is having an affair. I don't know if it's a resigning issue. It's poor judgment. I think maybe if it wasn't the chief people officer,
it would have been the head of HR.
Yeah, it would have been more forgivable. I think it's bad judgment of both. I would definitely get rid of her. She doesn't seem to be the best. She doesn't have the best grasp of HR, I would say.
Well, she is managing upward quite well. I think the problem with affairs... The problem with affairs and sorry, I don't mind my throat's going as if I'm having one or something. The problem with affairs is the work it places on everyone else.
Yes.
Because if it's known, then
it changes the dynamic of everything.
Changes the dynamic, and then the amount of time you spent kind of going, okay, who knows that? And am I supposed to say that thing? And who can be invited to that? So basically, they're just putting emotional labour. Do you remember that term? Mm-hmm. They're putting emotional labour. And this time, it's also placed on men as well, who are also working in the vicinity. And it's just people getting their hole is a pain in everyone else's hole. That's the problem with affairs.
Oh, also just wanted to inform people about the laws in Ireland for filming people. Because a lot of people are saying, like, are they allowed to do this? Is this illegal? So I've had a wee look. And in Ireland, you cannot expect privacy in a public place. So if you are in like a park or a shopping center or any of those places and you are filmed, that is not illegal. However, if the person videoing you becomes aggressive and it develops into harassment, then that is illegal. But you cannot expect privacy in a concert or a nightclub or a shopping center. You can be filmed and it's not against the law.
What if you're standing behind something and you've been filmed and then you duck down behind the thing? Is it okay then to go around the back of the thing and film the person hiding? Is that still public?
Yeah, that's still public.
So good news for, in inverted commas, citizen journalists everywhere.
Let's move on. Okay, we're staying with our summer vibes. We've had GAA, we've had concerts. Now we're talking holidays. Everyone's favourite Irish businessman, Michael O'Leary, the chief executive of Ryanair, has confirmed that his staff are paid commission to nail people at the gate for oversized cabin bags. So if anyone has TikTok, I think it flooded TikTok. The amount of people complaining about Ryanair's baggage, hand baggage policies, and that they were being charged for their little case not fitting in the little box. So the CEO, Michael O'Leary, confirmed this week that staff at the airline are paid commission on each bag that they charge for an oversized fee. The standard fee is usually 70 to 75 euro and 13 euro per kilo on excess baggage. Now, Michael O'Leary said he pays his staff a measly €1.50 per bag to catch the oversized bags, and he is thinking of increasing it to eliminate what he called the scourge of passengers arriving with oversized bags. I have been stung with this, and sometimes I think the thing that annoys...
It's unusual for you to bring your own personal peeves onto the podcast. You're normally like almost BBC-like in your impartiality. But this has affected you deeply.
It has. And like, the thing for me is I've had my bag in the wee sizer times and I would have said it fit. And then the Ryanair person says, no, 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 it doesn't fit. And it's subjective whether it fits or not. Yeah. But now I know that this person has a monetary gain out of leeching me out of 70 euro.
And what's the subjectivity like? Are we talking bags with kind of muffin topping over the
top? Yeah, I think it is subjective in that, like, does the edge of the hard suitcase have to be inside the line of the sizer, or can that be out? And it'll always probably just come down to the subjectivity of the person. Now, I would also say that that 150 that they're given for charging people is capped at 80 euro per month. So if you get to the end of the month... Mm. I would say a lot less people are getting stung because a lot of people have reached their cap limit.
It would be good to find out from a person at the desk, if you somehow could, how close they were to their limit or they're already over it. Yeah. And that would be the time.
There's no incentive for them to charge you. Maybe stand at the back of the line.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit like welfare cheating in that you pick...
In that it doesn't exist in the way you think it does.
Yeah, pick the small number of people who are an absolute pain in the hoop or holding everyone up, and then... kind of
make
spread the punishment out across everybody else. Like, if I had to punish anybody in terms of planes, it's the people who do not stand in from the aisle when putting their bags in the overhead lockers.
Immediate jail.
Now, I have an idea that if people...
No, sorry, can I just get another one while we're talking about airport peeves? And if you're one of these people and you're listening to this podcast, I'm happy for you to stop listening. When you get...
Wait a second. Because we kind of know all of them. So
when you get to the baggage carousel, and everyone's waiting for their bags, if you stand with your knees touching the baggage carousel, watching every bag go past so other people can't get in to get their bags, you shouldn't be allowed on planes.
Okay.
There is no need. And also, you'll see sometimes like five people from the one family standing right at the baggage claim so no one else can get near it. It drives me mental. Sorry, this is for a different podcast.
No, let's stick with that. I mean, are you saying like maybe some heavy-handed tactics are necessary just to kind of a...
They should make a line, like draw a line on the ground and say no one is allowed past this line until you can see your bag. Because what we don't need is 50, 60 people standing with their knees touching the barrier and rubbernecking around the corner to try and see if their bag's coming. If your bag's there, your bag's there.
It's great to see where everybody's authoritarian issue is. Like, you'll be like, oh... You know, all cops are bastards. Defund the police. We live in an authoritarian state, except for this one issue, which on the face of it would seem something you might be able to get on with your day about.
It drives me nuts.
And then having said that, right, people who don't stand in from the aisle when stowing their baggage, it should be entirely okay to sort of rugby tackle them as they're making an effete effort to put their bag up, to kind of get them right under their arms in the midriff. They'll only do it once.
Or people, when there is someone clearly struggling, usually like a woman or a young person, clearly struggling to get their suitcase into the overhead bin, and there will be a person on one side of them and a person on the other, and they just watch. They just watch this person struggle with their bag and don't say, I am taller, let me push this in for you.
Okay, let's bring
that's the sort of stuff Ryanair should be charging
That's
for.
What we should be doing. Airline fascism. Fascism has its place. Okay?
It does when it comes to public decency.
And by fascism, I mean the original one where somebody would walk around with a sort of a whip, the old Roman style. Anyway, it's good to get that off our chest. So we're saying anyway, bags that are a little bit over the limit are not the problem when it comes to boarding and taking time and all that. It's the MFers who don't stand in from the aisle or stand in the way of the baggage carousel. Okay?
Yeah. So on that happy note, Colm, do you want to give us your happy news? In a sad week for Cork people, it has to be said.
So, Aoife, have you ever found that your local area or someone you know has had kind of a random brush with fame? And like worlds have collided, say from way back when and right now. And you're like, I never in a million years dreamt those two people slash places would be said in the one spot.
My mammy works in a supermarket in Derry and she once sold, I believe it was some kind of meal deal, to Fat Man Scoop, the rapper.
The Fat Man Scoop of Engine Number 9, whatever that song is called.
Yeah, she texted me afterwards and said, do you know who Fat Man Scoop is? And I said, aye, the rapper, you know, that sings Engine Number 9. And she was like, aye, there was people in Marks and Spencer's getting their photo taken with him. But I thought he worked, I thought he worked for Derry City Council. Because he was wearing these like combat trousers with like reflective bits on it. So my ma thought he worked for like the bin people for Derry City Council.
Scooping up the bins.
Fat Man Scoop. And I've just realised from a quick Google that Fat Man Scoop is actually dead. He died last
Fat Man
year.
Scoop.
Yeah, so rest in peace, Fat
he was,
Man
Scoop. He got his name, given his name by his Uncle Jack as a child because he loved ice cream. Oh, poor old Fat.
R.I.P.
Yeah, this went in a completely different direction because I was going to talk about somebody else. We'll talk about them, but that I don't think people are aware of that.
Yeah, I didn't know Fat Man Scoop was dead.
And if you are of a certain age, Engine Number 9 is something you'd no idea what the song is called. Which it's called Be Faithful. Is that right?
Be Faithful. I did not know that was the name of that song.
And that's imprinted into our brains.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I remember it studying the junior cert. It's that kind of, let's see, what year was it? So, 1999 it was released. I feel that.
Oh my God, I was 8.
Yeah. Yeah, so Fat Man, Fat Man Scoop. Well, okay, so this isn't about Fat Man Scoop. This is about, I'm from a little village called Dripsy.
I do, their GAA club follows me on Instagram now.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, because that's probably my influence. Yeah,
yeah, shout out Dripsy Massive.
Shout out Dripsy. All-Ireland Junior Hurling Champions in 2009.
Good to know.
Split from Inniscarra GAA club, went on to win an All-Ireland 4 years later. And my home village, Dripsy Castle, it's basically like the sister castle to Blarney Castle.
Oh, okay, very good.
Built by the same people. By the people who brought you Blarney Castle. Dripsy Castle. McCarthy Moore.
That's my name.
Yeah, yeah. No, Moore is in, Moore is in big. That's probably where yours comes from.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah,
too.
Probably, yeah.
McCarthy Moore. And that castle is beautiful domain. Used to have a woolen mills and all of that. And there's loads of woods and it's a festival. It's ready for a festival.
Yeah.
And they had a festival at the weekend. The festival is called the World Peace Gathering.
So it's like something we have in the north.
Yeah. I think it's founded by people, the connections between Ireland and the Choctaw Nation during
nice.
The famine. So
yeah.
It's sort of built off the back of that. I'm sure they'll have a much better summary of what they do. So the World Peace Gathering, a lot of people juggling fire, I think, at this kind of thing. But I was looking onto the lineup and I first couldn't believe it. And then in the poster, and then I saw a headline in the Evening Echo, or it's The Echo, I think as it is now.
The Echo, yeah.
And so the poster had all of these people, Julian Lennon, one of the Lennons.
Yeah.
And then Sensei Steven Seagal, right?
Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal. Action. And it was like, surely not that Steven Seagal. But then it was like Sensei, because he's big into all of this. And yes, it was going to be that Steven Seagal was going to come to Dripsy at the weekend just gone to the World Peace Gathering.
The 80s action star.
Under Siege, On Deadly Ground, all of that. Putin's favourite martial artist. Because he's like, something about the way Putin does business really appealed to Steven Seagal since about 2010. And Steven Seagal also subject of a number of allegations from the Me Too era. And they were going to have Steven Seagal, Sensei Steven Seagal, at the World Peace Gathering. Well, the relief that went around the World Peace Gathering community, you can imagine, when it was announced during the week that he was no longer attending. I don't know which bit of Steven Seagal they kind of went,
objected to.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
When it comes
it wasn't
to World Peace
the
Gathering.
Allegations or the closeness to Putin. There was one, something that tapped them over the edge.
Maybe it was visa issues. Who knows?
Maybe it was visa issues.
Maybe Irish immigration, you know.
When they're not denying Palestinian children their visas, they're also denying 80s movie stars.
Maybe it was that. Maybe they're absolutely agnostic on the issues. And maybe he didn't have the correct parental consent forms or Garda vetting. I'm not sure. But anyway, he wasn't there. For me, that was my good news, that Dripsy was not associated with Steven Seagal, apart from a near miss. Not the only good news, but I'll take it.
Yeah, that's a good one. Do you know anything about Pine Martens?
I do, actually.
This is my good news. This is sent in from my very close friend and big fan of the pod, Claire Duffy.
Big fan of the pod, but also completely random fan of the pod. Nothing to do with being a friend of yours.
Yeah, exactly. Totally random fan. I'm not showing any favoritism whatsoever. So the Pine Martin, which is like a little, what are we calling it? Like a little ferret?
A little ferret.
A little ferret.
But so, I don't think you could expect ferret-like friendliness from a pine marten.
No, definitely not. So they are a woodland animal. In the past, they were once a common sight, but habitat loss and their persecution, this isn't my word, persecution in the 19th century greatly reduced their range. However, recent survey findings indicate a remarkable turnaround for pine martens throughout Ireland and a significant expansion throughout their traditional stronghold of County Fermanagh. This means encouraging news for another priority native mammal, the red squirrel, because the introduction of grey squirrels from North America decimated the native reds as they outcompete their smaller cousin for food and carry a deadly virus, which greys are immune. And now, the introduction of more pine martens not only has increased pine marten population, but that of the red squirrel.
Good news for Sammy Squirrel Saving Stamps fans everywhere. The red squirrel is on the way back. Because you see, the red squirrel knows the pine marten and knows to stay away, whereas the grey squirrel is like, hey, who's this friendly little fella? And then just give an American accent, even though he's been here.
Well, they are an invasive species from North America, so the little Yank grey squirrels are on the out.
Good news for the pine martens, not just in Fermanagh, but also good news for the pine martens in the beautiful south as well, too. Exactly. Sorry, that's a house martin reference.
Yeah,
that's
got
terrible.
That. Well
I'm sorry, let's stop. Pine martens are a bit like the sea, though, aren't they, Aoife? You know, wonderful, but they have a dark side.
Yeah, so my own personal issue with the pine martens was because they were a neglected species and they were, obviously the numbers were decreasing. Once a pine marten nest takes place, you can't move it. And once a number of years ago, we had a hen do booked for one of my friends in Fermanagh, the home of the pine marten. And we had booked this Airbnb. And then we got a call from the lady who owned the Airbnb. And she said, we're going to have to cancel your booking because there's a family of pine martens that have nested in the attic and we're not allowed to move them. And they are like, I think they could be a bit bitey, pine martens. And she said, we're going to have to cancel your booking. So we had to cancel the booking for the hen do because there was a pine marten family living there. So the hen had to be moved.
Okay.
But I mean, a small sacrifice for the people.
Absolutely, yeah.
Of Fermanagh.
So a new metaphor in the fox among the chickens and the pine marten among the hens.
Yeah.
Isn't that lovely? Yeah. You're very understanding about it. I doubt you were that understanding at the time.
We were all pretty pissed off.
These feckin' ferrets. And so I'm saying, they're not ferrets, they're pine martens.
We actually didn't know what pine martens were. Us city slickers didn't know what pine martens were. So that was our good news that came from Claire Duffy. Many thanks. We are always happy to hear your happy news. So if you have any, email them in at a few scoops@goloudnow.com. And more good news we're delighted to bring is that myself and Calum will be doing our first ever live episode of A Few Scoops on Friday the 1st of August at All Together Now. The Go Loud Lounge.
Oh dear. That they put that in on purpose. They were going to go with room and then they said, will we get Aoife to say lounge?
Yeah, it's very anti-dairy phrasing. So we will be performing live at the Go Loud Lounge at All Together Now. We will be on stage at 6 p.m. on Friday. I haven't checked the lineup. I assume we'll be better. That means you have enough time to get a chipper, come and watch the show, and then go off and listen to the music.
And the commuting at All Together Now is much smaller than Electric Picnic, so you don't need to leave as much time.
I've never actually been. I'm really excited. Friday night, the headliners are Fontaines DC, so I might just wear my Derry City top in advance of having to deal with so many people in Bose tops.
Yeah.
And
each one wearing a different Bose top.
There'll yeah.
Be a thousand different Bohemian
More shirts. Jerseys than trophies. Can't wait to get loads of shit on social media for saying that. So we'd love to see you all there. It is our first live podcast, so we're both pretty nervous about it. We will have a special guest and games, so please come and see us so we don't feel bad about it. And if it's raining, it'll be shelter. I have to give people options. From A Few Scoops, we would like to wish all the best to Donegal and Kerry this weekend. Yup, Donegal. And
that's not wishing both of them the best. That's very much.
Calum, what are you doing this weekend?
I'll be at the Ivy Gardens Comedy Festival. I'll be there on Sunday. It's on all weekend, Thursday to Sunday. It's one of the nicest comedy festivals beneath the leafy boughs of the Ivy Gardens, a park which some people actually still don't know exists.
Yeah.
It's opposite the queue to Coppers. Is Coppers still a thing?
Yes.
Yes, sorry. I remember it as a disco. Do they still do
it's
that
still,
now?
Yeah, it's still a disco. 3 or 4 floors of it. Spent some of the best times of my life in Coppers. And Calum, you have very good news this week.
Yeah, my 8th book is on pre-sale now. It's called Gallivanting with Words, How the Irish Speak English. There'll be a few Derry words in there.
Great.
And yeah, you can buy it at all the good and bad places to buy books. That'll be out in the autumn. So I'm looking forward to all the worry and existential dread that comes with launching a book. Remember those days, Aoife?
Yeah, I think I blocked most of that out. But I can't wait to read Calum's new book, and you can pre-order now.
That's right. Everywhere you get books and other things.
And just some housekeeping now from myself and Calum. If you could rate, review and subscribe to A Few Scoops, it really helps us reach new ears and new audiences. And also, most of the comments we believe are currently from our family members, so we would like to diversify that if we can.
I don't even have comments from my family members. So family members, could you comment on the podcast? But yes, please do like, share and subscribe. What we are hearing from people, including strangers, is that the podcast is filling a gap. They don't want to watch the news, but they kind of want to hear a bit of news and not feel absolutely miserable. So we think we're hitting that spot, and we'd love to hit more spots. You know, did I just make it weird?
Oh, hashtag time's up.